again, according to most, in this time period, right before Nebuchadnezzar comes in, according to most, the truth is that he lives during the time, perhaps even of Menashe. Now, why is this significant? Because if he lives during the time of Menashe, this is right before Amon and Yoshiahu, right before the Assyrians are about to fall. And this makes a lot of sense because soon thereafter, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to say, okay, the Babylonians are on the rise. And this is what's going to lead Habakkuk to say, Lama tafuk toratacha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what do you want about Israel? Again, they've just gone through an Assyrian oppression, and now you're telling me, while the Assyrians are still here, now you're telling me that the Babylonians are going to take over? So it's very interesting is that, again, both in sources of the Zohar and early Midrashim, we find that the personality of Habakkuk, of whom, if you take a look at his ksovet, we really don't hear much about. So again, Chazal tried to conserve his personality and say, firstly, he's the child of the Isha Shunamit. Anyone remember what I'm referring to? Remember, Elisha promises the Isha Shunamit, and at that hill, exactly, and then he faints in the field, and the Isha Shunamit comes running after Elisha, why did you lie to me? And after sending Gehazi and failing, Elisha comes and he basically lifts the child up to the Aliyat Gad, where he has been hosted by this Isha Shunamit, and he's going to revive the child. Now, why is that significant? And Chazal even say, this is hinted to in his name, Chavakuk, because it says that Elisha chibekoto, genso to his mother, also hugged him. So it must be that he's the child. Now, firstly, if he's the child, we know that this time period of Ahav is really, again, just to put this in perspective for a moment, is about... that who's his?
Like the servant man who like...
Obadiah? Oh, Gehazi? Which one? Okay, so Gehazi gets Sarat, and then Gehazi is Elisha's servant.
No.
Obadiah works for
Ahav.
Right, Obadiah, very nice. So some preserve him as Obadiah the Nabi, right, that we had discussed also. But it seems, according to Ibn Ezra, that he probably isn't. But what's interesting is that in the time period of Ahav, as we know, this is, again, just keep in mind that if the beginning of the Syrian invasion is Yerubbaal ben Yoash, four generations after Yehu, who wipes out the Ahav dynasty, Ahav is about, again, the middle of the 800s BCE. Again, we're talking 850-840 BCE. If that's the case, then Habakkuk, who definitely isn't living before Menashe time, right, again, cannot be living before, again, this height and ultimately the deterioration of the Assyrians. Again, we're now in the end of the 600s. That means that Habakkuk has to be really old, like about 150, 160 years old. Does everyone see that? So Chazal said, yeah, actually Habakkuk lived about 180 years old. Yeah, no, so that's one way of looking at it. Now, you have to remember, as the Rambam says, whenever you look at Midrashim, Chas v'Shalom, do not mock them. Rather do what?
Rabbi Leitag always says, take Midrashim seriously, but not literally always.
Very nice. So it's actually the Rambam, but that's right, meaning you're not supposed to literally, but those are his phrases, exactly. Seriously, but not literally, meaning maybe it's not saying that Habakkuk lived 180 years, rather the idea that Habakkuk's message lives on, and specifically by conserving his personality with the child that Elisha revived, what are they trying to say? That Elisha, now this is very interesting, because Elisha's the disciple of whom? Of Eliyahu. So it's almost as if, right, he's a pseudo-disciple of Elisha, right, slash Eliyahu. And truth be told, Habakkuk is going to remind you a lot of Eliyahu. So you should say, why not just preserve him as the child that Eliyahu revived?
Remember
Eliyahu?
Because Yonah was
ready to take. Oh, hakavod. That's really it. Because Chazal already associate Yonah as the child of the Ishat Sarfatit. And Yonah reminds us, for those who remember learning Yonah, and Yonah reminds us very much of Eliyahu. He actually quotes Eliyahu. And therefore, Yonah is, we'll say the, again, almost, I don't want to use Gilgulim terms here, but again, Eliyahu reincarnate? Fine, I did. And ultimately, here, Habakkuk is another Elisha, but really Eliyahu incarnate, right? What does that already tell you about this personality before you even open up? And a very extreme, a very vociferous, a very stubborn type of character. That's right. And what else?
Fundamentalist.
A fundamentalist. Very nice. Yeah, I would definitely say such. So let's take a look at Habakkuk. Anna, we're going to try to understand exactly who is. By the way, there's another Zohar that says that maybe he's not the child of the Isha Shunamit, but rather, 1 second, there are those who say that he actually was living during the time of Daniel. So instead of putting him earlier, we're now putting him later, during the time of Nebuchadnezzar. About how many years later? like 100 years later, because Daniel was part of Galut Yehoyachin in 597. So either notice this, we're either putting him, even though it seems that he's living around 680 BC, we're either putting him, or Chazal are putting him either in 850 BC or in 590 BCE, right, 100 year afterwards. We're in, and in some of the Svarim Chitzonim that add some of the details to Daniel, it seems that while Daniel was in the lion's den, that he was fed by someone. So Chazal say, who was he fed by? Habakkuk. Right, again, what's the message there? We have no proof for this. As a matter of fact, why would anyone go into a lion's den to feed Daniel and while there are lions there? So it's trying to show you what?
A connection between them,
that both of them relate to the Babylonian conquest, the Yafan, that both perhaps even find favor in the eyes of Babylonia, or both feel threatened by Nebuchadnezzar, both, or saying that Habakkuk is on the same level as Daniel, that he relates them, he's going to sacrifice or risk his own life in order to go into the Gofar Rayot. So these are some of the ideas that are going to come across, but we're going to take a look at Habakkuk based on his content and try to understand what the basic message is, through which then we'll be able to appreciate all the more why Chazal can serve his personality as they do. Note, though, that here we really are going to refer to an ambiguous Navi because we hardly know anything about him. Hamasa asher chaza, Habakkuk ha-Navi. Two prophetic terms that are employed here, both Masa and Chaza. Habakkuk ha-Navi, no name of father, no place, nothing. It's almost as if he comes out from the middle of nowhere. Again, who does he remind you of? Eliyahu, right, who came, don't know anything about him, just came out one day, Eliyahu Anavi, Ad Anna Hashem Shivati Velo Tishma. Now this is a clear example of a nevuah that to a certain degree is taken out of context, right? This clearly is not his first nevuah. How do I know that? Because from his content, we're going to see that he's responding to something that Hashem told him. And the question is, why don't we care about what Hashem told him? The answer is that it's going to be pretty clear, based on his response, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him. So you ready? Again, this tells us, by the way, that many Nevi'im, especially the Nevi'im of the Treyasai, deliver many more nevuah than were actually canonized. And Ana Hashem Shivati V'lo Tishma, Azake Lacha Hamas V'lo Tashi. How long am I going to have to cry out to you without you listening? Screaming? Hamas, it's injustice, and without you saving. Lama Tarini Aven Va'amal Tavit. Why do you force me to look at all the evil that's in the world, telling us that? Obviously, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu divulge to Habakkuk? Perhaps through a mar'eh, what did he see in his vision? Some aven va'amal, right? What does that mean? He saw some vision of oppression. Vishod v'chamas l'negdi. You've made me see this, v'hiriv umadonisa. And now, Gana, I have to carry this along with me. Meaning, why did you even show this to me? Al kein tafuk Torah. Basically, what did Hashem show him? Some level of oppression that Habakkuk obviously feels is unjust, right? Too much HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So why did you even share this with me? Now, we all know, why does a Navi receive a mar'eh from Hashem? In order to share this with the people. So what is Habakkuk basically telling God? I don't understand. I don't understand how you can give me such a nevuah. Now, why is he already a little bit of an iconoclast? Why is he already very different than other Nevi'im? Other Nevi'im, you give them a nevuah, what do? They just say that nevuah. Again, we heard Amos, we heard Micha. Again, we hear of harsh nevuot, and again, that's what a Navi gives sometimes. And who does he remind you of a little? We're in. Hashem gave him a nevuah, and he's not going to give it right away. He's going to argue with God and say, thank you. Again, very much Yonah. So let's continue, though. We're going to see, what did Yonah do? Yonah actually didn't verbally argue with God. He just
ran away.
Again, this was the passive-aggressive response. He just got up and moved in the other direction, right? In Tarshish, instead of Nineveh. Here, Habakkuk is going to engage in, we'll even call it, again, a certain debate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Al kein tafuk Torah. Hashem, you know what? If you ask me to deliver this nevuah, it's going to weaken Torah. V'lo yitzeh la'netzach mishpat. And justice will never prevail. Ki rasha machtir et tzadik. Because your nevuah justifies the rasha. Again, ki rasha machtir et tzadik. Al kein yitzeh mishpat mokal. When the wicked is the one to crown the righteous one. What does that mean? Who's in charge? Your nevuah proves that bad people are in charge. That's right. And that's what's going to cause crooked system of justice. Ruva goyim vabitu. Hitzmamut mahu. Kipo poel b'mechem. Now I know from this pasuk, who are the ones who are succeeding? Who are the rishaim who are crowning? Who are the ones who are causing all the oppression? All these goyim that are out. They're the ones who are so active. Lo taminu ki yisupar. And people cannot believe when this is told. Kinini mekim etakastim. Hena, and this is what you have told me, Hashem, that now you're going to bring the kastim, hagoy, hamar, v'hanimhar. You showed me this horrific nation, haolech l'merchavei aretz, that are going to trespass through the entire ancient Mesopotamia, l'reshem mishkanot lolo, and they're going to begin to conquer areas that do not belong to them. But this is so fascinating, because that's exactly what happens. The kastim are Chaldeans who live in the southeastern areas of Mesopotamia. And what do? Just like other ethnic tribes, again, can you name some southeastern ethnic tribes that you're familiar with? Midian, Yishmael, even Edomites and Moabites and Ammonites, right? What do I mean by this? Truth is that they're not really ethnic tribes, they're actually nations because they have lands, but they're never really empires, right? What are these Chaldeans? We've never heard of them before, certainly not a world power. They're more like the Yishmaelim, the Midianim. Again, now they're coming from the areas of Ammon. And slowly but surely, this is an amazing idea, that they're going to come and conquer all these conquered lands from whom? They're now under Ashur, right? And basically, they're going to become a world power, and they're going to end up causing Am Yisrael oppression. Right, that's now, we figured out from Habakkuk's response, we figured out the nevuah that he saw. And he says, Hashem, it's not fair. What's not fair? Until now, every Nabi who has hinted to oppression always speaks about what? Sorry about that. What do they always speak about? Anna? The reason why this is going to happen is because so-and-so. Or if you do not do tshuva, then, again, yes, the Assyrians are going to come and destroy you. What happens over here? This time we find that all he sees is oppression, but they're living under the Assyrians right now. So it's almost as if Habakkuk is going to be privy to see a nevuah wherein, without any respite, Am Yisrael are going to go from one oppression to the other. Is that true? More or less. What do I mean by that? There is a slight time of relief from the Assyrian armies between about 640 and 612 BCE. So again, if you can picture this for a moment, during the reign of Yoshio, for about 30 years of respite of nationalism. Very nice. But ultimately, what's going to happen right afterwards? The Chaldeans come to power. That's right. By the way, based on this, should people have been shocked when Yirmiyahu would be saying things like, you know, you should really surrender to the Babylonians now instead of allying yourselves with the Egyptians because the Chaldeans really are the up-and-coming empire? Is there some precedent for what Yirmiyahu is saying? Definitely. Pasuk Zayin. Again, they're going to be awful. Then they're going to inflict upon us very harsh judgment. And they are swifter than leopards. And they're sharper than the wolves of prey. And all their chariots are going to come from afar. This is a very famous phrase. They're going to come in with their chariots flying like the vultures, quick to consume. They're coming only with one intention, and that is obviously injustice, to oppress us. And really, Gena, they're going to place their heads forward. Again, but in Tanakh, Kadima doesn't just mean forward, it means eastward. Meaning that they're going to try to control us, not really because they want the land, but rather because their goal is really Kadima. And this is corroborated later by Yechezkel, who discusses how Nebuchadnezzar, in fact, after winning the war of Carchemish in 605 BCE, he throws arrows to see in which direction the gods want him to conquer. Now, just to remind you, anytime anyone conquered Eretz Yisrael, it's not for agricultural resources. How do you know that? Thank you very much. Again, so it's for the trade routes. That's right. So if you're coming, the question is, which trade route should I conquer first? What are your various trade routes in Eretz Yisrael? The coastal trade route, very nice. Again, Zerach Hayam, excellent. Again, which was also called Zerach Mitzrayim. That was the easiest one for the Egyptians. What else? Thank you. Very nice. That's Bamatahar, in the middle of the country, which is where we also call Zerach Avot. Through the mountains for security purposes. Definitely not good for an invading army. How about Bekaat HaYarden, right? The eastern coast, which was also, again, how the Yishma'ilim, the Midianim, they would go, and then they would cut across either in the northern part or in the southern parts, again, below or above the mountains. That's right. You see Dina's looking at her map. Excellent. So can you track this? Again, you see these three north-south routes. So the question is, to conquer, what's the advantage of the Jordanian route? Again, Bekaat HaYarden coast. Valley, it's, again, you don't have to worry really about flooding from the Mediterranean, nor about infiltrations from the sea. Again, rather, if you take an army through, you basically can protect yourself, again, along this topographical border and make your way down, ultimately, to Mitzrayim. So the question is, should we conquer that trade route from Eretz Yisrael, or what's your alternate? The alternative is through Moab, Ammon, right? Basically what we call the Transjordan. And according to Yechezkel, he throws arrows and they all end up going in which direction? Yerushalayim. So that's how he figures that he's supposed to conquer Yerushalayim. Notice this, but really, what does he want to conquer? He wants to conquer this eastern trade route. So that's what Habakkuk is speaking about. And he's going to become so powerful that he's going to make fun of other kings and other officers. He's going to laugh in the face of fortifications. Right? Napoleon was like this as well. It's going to be like collecting dust in his hands as he conquers. And then God, you know what he's going to do? He's going to oppress us. He's going to wipe us out. And then after all this, he's going to attribute the strength to his God. So you, God, you have preceded. Again, all these other gods. You are my God. Notice the specific terminology is employed here. Halo atam mikedem. You are both. He's playing off of the mikedem. You were there. Again, mikedem can mean to the east, but also from way back when. Hashem Elokai Kedoshi, you are the source of my holiness. Lo namut Hashem lo mishpat samto, v'tzor lo kiyach yisadato. And God, you place justice to be upheld. Again, you have a firm grounding. Tor einayim ra'ot ra. And this is where many philosophical questions come up that Rabbi Kroll addressed a little yesterday in terms of theodicy. Again, God, you do respond to the actions of man, and you, Tahor Einayim, you have such pure eyes that it should be difficult for you to see evil, because if you're the God of good and the God of holiness, then you should not allow for the perpetuation of this evil. V'habit alamal lo tuchal, I know you, God. It hurts you to see oppression. Lama tabit bugdim tacharish babala rasha tzadik mimenu. So how can you look at these oppressors and these traitors? How can you be silent when you see the evil people swallowing up those that are more righteous than they? Again, the Baglim against Yisrael. How can you simply tolerate people who are treating people like fish, karemis lo moshelbo? Again, like insects, kula b'chaka ela, you go rehu b'chermo, v'yasfeu b'mechmerto, catching them in his net, al kein yismach v'yagil, and then being happy, al kein yizabech l'chermo v'yakater b'mechmerto, ki b'him Hashem ein choko u'machalo b'riyah. And then again, he'll place it, and he'll sacrifice this to his own God. Al kein yarik chermo, v'tamid l'harol goyim lo yachmol. So God, you're going to allow this to happen without compassion. In other words, Habakkuk is standing against God, and what does he say? I am not delivering your nevuah. No, because I don't understand it. God, explain it to me. Explain why you're willing, notice that he doesn't say, to risk the name of Hashem, but you're willing to risk the Torah. Why should people stay from if you're going to oppress them time and time again? Again, do you ever ask yourself this? Like, why be Jewish if everyone knows that Jews are always oppressed? Isn't that a good question? And that's Habakkuk's question. And he basically is going to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, Anna, none of that. How can you let this happen? I thought you're the God who doesn't let this happen. Anna, for those who saw the quote yesterday from Elie Wiesel in 1995, Elie Wiesel would always say that he's angry at God. He's angry at God. And for many, many years, and he did not fully embrace Torah u'mitzvot, he would go to shul on Shabbat and to KJ and on Yom HaKippurim, and he would say, out of respect for his father, in 1995, the 50th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, he made a very famous address. He said, I've been angry at God. He said, but now, he says, and I have never understood God. He said, but I realize that instead of turning all my questions to God, I should realize that I should really turn my questions to the people. Right? Why? He says, I've been angry at God for allowing this to happen. He said, but it's not about God allowing it to happen. Who did this? And he brings in the idea of free will, right? Bechira chofshit, which is really what Dr. Schatz wrote about as well, that bechira chofshit, God gives man freedom of choice, and this is what man does with it. So that's an alternate way of understanding, but this isn't what Habakkuk says. He says only that you're God, and you should allow for good, and you should not be able to tolerate evil, in addition to thinking of the consequences thereof. And therefore, this is going to take us into Perek Bet, Al Mishmarti Emoda Vityatzva Al Matzor, Vatzapelorot Mayida Berbi, Umashiva Tochachti. So Habakkuk says, so you know what, I'm going to stand my guard, Vityatzva Al Matzor, and I'm going to stand on the fortification, giving us a sense that he's where? He's on the walled cities of Yerushalayim. I always say this pasuk when I'm walking the ramparts around the gates, but the truth is that that's so anachronistic because those ramparts were built by Solomon in the 1520s. But again, just to give you like a picture of it. And obviously Habakkuk then saying this. Anyone remember where this is quoted in Gemara? Amishmarti Amoda Vitzva al Matsor, the Spot of Masachatanit, Daf, Chaf Gimel, meaning you should know this. This is the story of Choni HaMa'agel. Again, when they ask him for rain, and Choni does what? He does something also very strange. He, instead of incorporating Tfilah and Tanit, which was the rabbinic law during the time, he's going to draw a circle around himself. Again, and Chazal say, just like Chavakuk HaNavi, Al Mishmarti Amot Avet Yatel Al Matzor. He basically says, I'm not getting out of the circle until you bring me rain. And the question is, excuse me, Choni, like, who do you think you are? And sure enough, the Gemara even says, again, what? He thinks he's like Chavakuk. And at the end, Shimon ben Shetach even accosts him and says, what, you think you're like Eliyahu HaNavi? In other words, here you have a Tanaitic figure who's acting like a prophet. And there are two problems here. Firstly, you're not a prophet. And secondly, even these prophets are quoted because they were very chutzpahdik. And that's why I say the Habakkuk is the father of chutzpah amongst the Nevi'im. Right? As opposed to Moshe, who will plead with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As opposed to, again, even if you think of another chutzpahdik Navi like Avram Avinu, right, who is going to also debate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaShofei Kol Haaretz Lo Ya'aseh Mishpat. Notice, what is Chavakuk's response? I'm just not going to deliver your nevuah until you give me an answer. Why do I say that he's even more chutzpahdik than Yonah? Yonah, again, didn't even tell God, I'm not delivering your nevuah. What did he just do? He ran away from me. He basically, I wouldn't say avoiding the issue. And as much as what does he want to do? He's like, okay, God, I completely disagree with you. So I am, again, very clearly going to disobey you. And I know what are the consequences for kibush nevuah. Death. And I'm okay with that. Again, I would rather die, he says a few times. Tov moti michayai. This is when he's quoting Eliyahu HaNavi. And I would rather die so that your justice can be proved. Notice Chavakuk, why do I say then that Chavakuk is more chutzpahdik? Because Yonah, at least, he doesn't even bother engaging with God. He basically says, okay, God, show me your justice, right, by killing me. And he's okay with that. Again, Chavakuk is so not okay with this. Chavakuk is going to get up in front of God and say, no, I don't allow for this. No, I'm not going to do my job until you do your job, God. Oh my gosh, right? If your child ever does this, or even a chanich in camp, right, what would you do? It would take them straight to Chana, right? Would Chana say, okay, so Ben, you know, do your job so that he'll do his job, right? Would that be the proper response? No, no way. Right, so take a look at this. And it's strange that, like Chavakuk, Choni will also be answered, so God will give in, but I want you to appreciate the chutzpah over here. Dina.
The only thing I was going to say about the difference between Yonah and Chavakuk is just that when I'm a babysitter and the kids, you know, either say, no, I'm not going to do this, or don't respond, I'm actually much more frustrated by the kids who just walk away.
Very nice. Beautiful, right? You're frustrated, but in terms of the child, who would you say is the more chutzpahdik child? The child who answers you back, or the child who walks away? What would you say? The child who walks away,
well, actually,
the one who walks away, it's more insulting.
The one who
is
he's ignoring you, but
the other one is demanding, like,
thank you. But you have to remember, you're not God for a second. Meaning, the child who's walking away, Yonah, who's walking away from God, what does he know? There are going to be consequences, right?
Well, except Chavakuk presumably also knows there are going to be consequences.
Very nice.
Part of me,
why do I say? Why am I using Zafka the term? I'm not even saying insulting or again disrespectful. What's chutzpah? Chutzpah isn't just disrespect. What's chutzpah?
Like
a certain level of arrogance, right? I'm not, exactly. Meaning, if you would ask me, I'm serious, meaning two chanichim, you're right, it may be more insulting. Two chanichim who disagree with you. Right? So one is just going to walk away. The other stands up to you and says, and starts arguing with you. But you are, now imagine for a moment that you're not a madrich, you're God. Right, so which requires more arrogance? I think about these things, right? Which is a more arrogant chutzpah, right? And more arrogant insult? To turn to God and say, no. And now the truth is that Moshe Rabbeinu also said this, Hashem, if you don't come with me, then, you know, then I'm just not going. But Chavakuk says a little more than that. I'm just not moving until
you give me
an explanation.
In terms of our relationship with God, could you argue that it's more chutzpahdik to just decide, well, I don't have any meaning that Chavakuk,
I don't
at least
want a relationship with
right,
his dad. Right,
he at least
Yonah.
Engages.
Very nice, right? So Yefe Ma'od, which I think takes a lot more gumption. No, sometimes it's easier to run away if I don't want to deal with it, even if I know there are consequences, than to actually, again, face it. So the truth is that that's why I'm saying that. Again, to a certain degree, there is precedent here in Moshe Rabbeinu, who also says something like this. We say, wow, wow. So much so that if Moshe would not have done it, I would have said, okay, this would be like reason for Navi retirement, right? Again, a reason to, for Hashem's part, to retire a Navi. But obviously, Chavakuk knows that he can do this.
The thing is, though, in some ways, though, isn't that a positive thing that he wants to engage with God and he wants to talk to him about it? Like, Yonah was saying, like, God, I don't care. Like, I don't care about what you're saying. I'm just not going to listen. Like,
very
I'm just walking
nice.
Away. Like,
Chavakuk
was, like, saying, I care what you have to say.
Oh,
talk
I see what you're saying. Meaning, Chavakuk wants God to answer him, to explain his ways. Yonah doesn't even want an explanation. Now, what's interesting about
Yonah... Yonah thinks he knows better. Chavakuk wants to understand.
Very nice. Or I would say Yonah's trying to prove something, right? And that is that God really does act with justice, whereas Chavakuk doesn't want to prove, he just wants to understand. Yefe, right? I think that definitely different motivations going on. So, okay, let's even say they're tied for chutzpah, but I just want you to recognize, again, that this is a very extreme note of chutzpah over here. Ma'ashiv al tachofti. Again, even the way he says it. Again, I'm going to stand here and I'm not going to move. Vatzapelorot ma'izaberbi. And I will wait and see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu will tell me. By the way, again, here's a little bit of the arrogance included within the disrespect. What do I mean by this? He's confident that Hashem's going to come and talk to him. Excuse me, right? Who are you? Nevuah comes from Hashem. O ma'ashiv al tachofti. And what? Notice that. What is ma'ashiv al tachofti? Not what Hashem will answer me, but what I'm going to answer once God, al tochachti. Again, for my tochacha, presumably the tochacha that Hashem is going to offer me. Right? So notice, he's not just waiting for an answer. He's already ready to do what?
Refute.
To answer back, to refute the answer that Hashem gives him. Ve'aneni Hashem. And Hashem, lo and behold, comes to give him an answer. But I don't want to make you late for your ku'ula. And I'm sorry that I'm cutting you short, right in the middle of the suspense. But I'd like you to do, though, if you may, because we're going to engage, because I think Chavakuk is such a fascinating Navi, of which we only have, as you see, three prakim. Notice that Hashem answers him. The sense that you're supposed to get from the Navi is right away, telling you that every once in a while, is it okay to be chutzpahdik? To God, in what sense? In what realm? What is it that's bothering Chavakuk, that bothered Yonah, that bothers Moshe, that bothers Aaron? Justice. Please remember that. Again, only in the realm of justice. You can't tell God. Again, when it comes to exactly issues of the Odyssey, I always say, scream out to God. Again, you can be angry with God. There are plenty of people. By the way, I left out one, because he's not a Navi. Who's that? Who also screams to God? Eov. And therefore, we have plenty of precedent that it's okay. People always ask, you mean I can really scream at God? I can let out my anger at God? Yeah, go ahead. Right? Relate to God. And just like you said, at least there's some level of engaging with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Notice Parakimot. Tzfilah l'chavakuk ha-Navi al shigyonot. Then we're going to see, what is this shigyonot? And what is a tzfilah? Generally, what is a tzfilah in Tanakh?
Like a song of
thanks. A song of thanks? Or Bakasha. Usually it's Vila's Bakasha. So we're going to wonder, what is it that he's asking now? He already asked for something that he got, and that is that Hashem answered him. So there is precedence for this. Also, Moshe Rabbeinu, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does engage with Moshe Rabbeinu. So we're going to take a look and see, how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu give an answer to, again, issues of the Odyssey? This obviously is going to be one of the basic formulations in all of Tanakh. I always say, to a certain degree, it's a summary of Sefer Iyo, so we're going to, instead of rushing through it, I hope you don't mind, we'll learn it truly in depth tomorrow, Beseder, and then keep in mind that right afterwards, we're going to begin Nevi'ei Shivat Tzion, Chagai Zecharia Malachi. Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. Enjoy the